Hi, it's me, Tiwa Ogunlesi. I'm a life coach, founder of Confident and Killing It, and you're listening to the Confident and Killing It podcast. This show is about waking you up to your worth so you can be confident, unstoppable, and dare to live the life that you truly desire. No more fear and insecurities getting in the way. It's time to master your mind, believe in yourself, and show up in the world. Let's get into it.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Confident and Killing It podcast. Thank you so much for joining and listening in. Today, I am super excited to have a very special guest, Stephanie Yeboah. She is a multi-award-winning content creator, the author of the debut novel, Fatally Ever After, which is a Black fat girl's guide to living life unapologetically. She's also a freelance journalist and has written for Lonely Planet, The Independent, Refinery 29, Vogue, Elle, Red Magazine, GQ, Metro, and Stylist Magazine. She's also a body confidence advocate and public speaker. Wow, what a phenomenal woman. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about learning to love your body, healing from past trauma and pain caused by negative comments from people, dismantling fat phobia and unrealistic standards of femininity society uses to shame women and hold us back. With no further ado, let's get into it. Steph, how's it going?
Hello, I am good. I'm so well. How are you? Thank you for having me on.
No, my pleasure. I'm good, thanks. June has been a really nice month to me. May was like a complete roller coaster, but June has been good vibes. Yeah, what about you?
Yeah, absolutely the same. I think May was, it was such a rush for me because it was like my birthday, but then also I moved apartments as well. So I moved on the 1st of May. My birthday was on the 5th of May. There was just like a lot going on with like moving stuff and unpacking and building and DIY and stuff. So June is very calm, kinder. I've now been able to settle into my new place. So it's all good.
Lovely. Oh, amazing. Moving into a new space is just so like, it just lifts your energy, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just so serene now. Like, I feel like I can actually like have the space to create content and just like chill.
Yeah, I feel you. Okay, so I want to kick off with some icebreaker-ish questions. Okay, so just really like quick fire round answers. So if you could live anywhere in the world, where would you want to live?
Japan, Tokyo specifically.
Really?
Yeah. Ooh. I love Japan. I went there a couple of years ago and it was just the most incredible experience. Like, oh yeah, beautiful food, technology driven. Like, I'm a huge fan of like tech and gadgets and stuff. And so being in the heart of that was amazing. The shopping's amazing and people are really, really lovely as well.
Okay, next question. What's your favorite quote that you're loving at the moment, or a quote that you really live by?
Oh, this is an easy one. So the quote that I live by, like my favorite quote, is stay ready so you don't have to get ready. And for me, that is always be prepared, constant vigilance. Like, I'm somebody that is like a planner, to write down to the T. I plan for every eventuality. I love lists. I love being hyper aware of my surroundings. So it's like I always have like a plan B, C, D, and E for anything that I do. I like to be caught unawares. I can't stand it.
Yeah. So, yeah. I love that. What event in your life would make a good movie?
What event would make a good movie? I guess when, okay, so it might not be like the happiest, but I do think it is interesting. So when I was five, I every year me and my family would go back to Ghana for summer holidays. And when I was seven. So when I was seven, we went to Ghana to stay with family over the holidays. And I remember the day before we were supposed to fly back so I could start school, I woke up the next day, like in the evening, I said, you know, goodnight to my mom, packed everything, Woke up the next morning, my mum had flown back to the UK without me.
No.
So it's one of those situations where literally I had been flown back to Ghana and I had to, I didn't know that I was staying there. And I ended up being there for 2 years, not knowing why I had been left here with like family members I didn't really know. Had my hair shaved, didn't know what that was about, had to start a Catholic primary school where Whoa. Corporal punishment was still a thing. So it was suddenly like over the next week had to get used to having short hair and then being whipped at school. It was insane.
Oh my gosh.
It was insane. Whoa. Yeah. It was a very interesting time in my life. Wow. But I think that would make a good movie, I think. It's just wild.
Yeah.
Wild.
That is quite wild. And also like the level of resilience that you would have gone through.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Amazing. Okay. Would you rather have a pause, fast forward, or rewind button in your life?
Oh, definitely rewind, because I think knowing the things that I know now, if I was to take it back, I would tell young Steph so many affirming things that would help her cope through her childhood and teenhood without feeling so self-deprecating and having low self-esteem. I would definitely go back and just tell her things that I have since grown up to learn. Yeah, definitely to go back.
I totally agree. Just like once you know that knowledge now, and then that's why you wrote a letter to your body, right? And exactly. Kind of like to your younger self, because when you just have that new information, it's just like, okay, let's do this over again from a place of love, you know?
Exactly.
Amazing. Okay, last question. Tell me about a time where you felt really confident and killing it.
A moment where I felt like that. I think, do you know what it was? I think, yes, it was 2019 in St. Lucia. And it was the first time since 2013 that I had been on a beach and I wore a full bikini. And for me, that was a very, very life-affirming moment, because up until then, I had been so petrified to wear, you know, a two-piece swimsuit in public, being fat, being so scared of what people would think about me. The last time I did that, also just to kind of include like a trigger warning as well, because I might be speaking a lot about like eating disorders and weight loss and things. But the last time I wore a two-piece on the beach, I was in the middle of a very, very aggressive eating disorder, and I had sort of purposely tried to lose as much weight as possible in order to have like a bikini body. And so that whole event was just really traumatic for me. So being able to kind of relive that, but in, you know, being a lot bigger than I was back then and just feeling tons more confident. Oh, yeah. It was just, yeah, it was one of the best moments of my life, just being able to be free. And it's liberated. It was lovely.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, the freedom that comes with being unapologetic and loving who you are is just incredible. And I love that that was the main thing that stood out. And I love how your face, you literally lit up just now. Like you were reliving those freedom moments.
Oh, it was amazing. It was so good.
Oh, I love that. Okay, so that's a great way to transition into my first question, which is all about your self-love journey and learning to be confident and unapologetic. From kind of some of the things you shared earlier and also in your story, you know, there've been moments where you really didn't love your body and you had a quite an abusive relationship with your body. So it would be good to hear about how you've gone through that period and also reclaiming the word fat as well. And I noticed you also talked about how fat isn't a bad word. It's the meaning that society has given it that makes it bad. But it, in itself, it is not a bad word. So yeah, please talk a little bit about your self-love journey and how you've, you know, reclaimed the word fat and feeling confident and unapologetic in yourself.
Oh gosh, my story. It's just so like, gosh. So when I, being a child, I was always bigger. I was always chubby. My dad's side of the family are quite big. And so I was always big, but I never really thought about my weight as a child up until the age of 11. You know, I didn't really care because I was out running around and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But as soon as I hit secondary school, the first day of secondary school, actually, I started getting bullied first because of my surname. You know, kids back then, when they hear like African surnames, you know, all of that kind of bullying started. But then it moved on to my weight and also my skin color being called, you know, Blick and Midnight and all of these kind of things. And so that was where the issues with my body really began. I was not only bullied verbally by, it was a group of six boys. So two of them were in the year above and then the rest were kind of within my year. So it wasn't only verbal stuff, it was mostly physical bullying as well. So getting beaten up and having things thrown on me and stuff. And so I think when you go into school every day and you're being told that you're ugly, you're this, you'll never find love, you're, you know, all of these horrible things, it begins to kind of sow seeds into your brain. And especially as a young child, when you're still receiving loads of information, that was beginning to tick over in my brain. And because I was always quite a quiet child, I didn't really feel like I could talk to anybody about how I was feeling. The bullying continued until I finished secondary school, so when I was 16. And by then I had developed really terrible, an amount of self-hate about my body. I hated myself. I didn't wear dresses or anything sleeveless. I wanted to feel invisible. And unfortunately, with the family dynamic that I had at the time, I didn't feel comfortable sharing that I was being bullied at school. So my parents didn't really know that I was being bullied until like I told them when I was in uni or something. Yeah, I mean, I did kind of allude to it to my dad when I was about 14. And he said something along the lines of, well, if you weren't so fat, then you wouldn't get bullied. And I think when he said that, it kind of was like, oh, wow. Okay. So my own dad thinks like it's my fault that I'm getting bullied. And so when you hear that kind of thing, especially by like family members, it kind of makes you feel like, oh, wow. So if they can say that, then maybe it must be me. From 16 up until the age of about 23, again, I was very quiet. I didn't really go out. I wasn't social. I missed so many opportunities, a lot of it purposely and a lot of it just because I didn't feel confident enough to partake in the things that I wanted to do. In my late teens and early 20s is when I developed quite bad eating disorders. But at the time, you know, I didn't see it as an eating disorder because in my head, only like slim people can get eating disorders. And so I saw what I was doing as something that would be beneficial for my health. So it included things like bulimia, it included things like, you know, I don't want to go into all of the methods that I use because I wouldn't want anybody to kind of like be inspired by that. But, you know, things like I even had family members giving me appetite suppressants that they bought randomly online from like European countries and stuff. So they weren't even like tested here to see if they were safe because it seemed like everybody was invested in my weight loss. So, I think the moment for me where I was like, do you know what? This is actually too far. I need to do something about how I feel about my body. I think the breakthrough for me was the moment that I spoke about earlier when I was on the beach as a 23-year-old. So for me, it was coming up to my 23rd birthday and I wanted to go to Barcelona for a birthday trip because my uncle lived out there. And so I thought, oh, I'll have somewhere to stay and I really want to go on the beach. But in order to go to the beach, you need to have a bikini body. And so I challenged myself to lose 4 stone in 3 months. And I tried to do that as hard as possible using all of these toxic methods. And I actually did it. And I lost all of this weight, had loose skin, but my stomach was a lot smaller. So I went out and bought, you know, these bikinis and stuff, went to Barcelona, got on the beach. And then I went back to my uncle's house, looked in the mirror and I was like, I actually feel disgusting. I think I hadn't hated myself more than when I looked in the mirror that day because I thought to myself, okay, so I have the acceptable body type, but mentally I feel so terrible. I had put my body through all of this abuse for what? Because I went to the beach and nobody looked at me. Nobody came up to me. No guys came up and they were like, oh, look at you with your hot new, like, you know, hourglass shaped body. Like, yeah. I was just as invisible. And I just thought to myself, like, I literally, because I think with some eating disorders as well, you can get quite bad physical side effects if depending on what you do. So at that time, I was really ill. And I just thought, I've done all of this for nothing. Like, why have I done all of this? I feel terrible. I almost feel like I need to do more now because I wasn't satisfied with how I looked. So when I came back to the UK, I was like, okay, do you know what? Something has to change. I can't continue to let the hatred of my body ruin my life, because now I've realized that I feel like I have been doing this to prove a point to everybody. And for the longest time, I had been apologizing on behalf of my body to people. I had been, you know, whether it's sitting on the bus and having somebody sit next to me and me just automatically by instinct saying, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, trying to make myself smaller so that they can be more comfortable. Things like that. I had always apologized for my body, apologized for being big, you know, when all that time I should have been apologizing to my body for all of the hurt and harm that I had put it through. So with the help of the blog that I had at the time, and I still have, but at the time I was writing more about like beauty and entertainment and all of that kind of stuff, I decided to start writing my thoughts and my feelings about how I looked. I decided to really start that journey towards healing. And for me, finding communities of women who were going through the same thing was a huge, huge, huge stepping stone for me. So since about 2014 to now, that's kind of where my journey has taken me. It's, you know, finding these positive communities of other fat women who look amazing. It was getting used to shedding the shame behind the word fat, because you know, we as a community still, you know, people are scared of the word because it is associated with ugliness. It's associated with being lazy and grotesque and all of these things. And it's a hard thing to unlearn. It's a hard thing to kind of break out of that shell and be like, oh, actually, I don't mind being called fat, because I know that for me, it doesn't mean those things. Fat, just like the word, you know, slim, short, black, white, muscular. It's a description of a body type. There isn't any positive or negative connotation with those words. It literally just describes. But unfortunately, in the societies that we've lived in for, you know, quite a few decades now, it has been associated with ugliness and unattractiveness. And that is the reason why people do not like that word, because they think it automatically makes them ugly. But obviously you can be fat and you can be beautiful. You know, it's not the same thing. So for me, once I realized, you know, I'm not going to let people use this word against me, I'm going to reclaim it, because once you reclaim the word fat, it's like, well, what else can somebody call you?
Thank you so much for sharing that. And yeah, being so vulnerable. I think one of the, I want to start off with the bullying and the kind of trauma to have your dad kind of say that to you. That's quite a heavy blow. And I think a reason why a lot of women really struggle to be unapologetic is because they're afraid of what other people are going to think, and they're afraid of the negative comments. And a lot of women also struggle to let go of their past. You know, you might have been called names when you were younger, and you carry that identity with you your whole life, and it begins to weigh you down and you can't free yourself from that. And I also saw that you mentioned kind of about 70% of the interaction that you receive online, even till today, is abusive or is fat shaming in some nature. But yeah, you kind of push through that and you still tell your story. So how were you able to overcome the bullying and the negative comments? And how are you still able to do that today and still unapologetically put yourself out there, knowing that there are trolls literally waiting to come out after you?
I think for me, I guess two reasons why that is. And they may not be the best reasons, but it has worked for me. One, I can be extremely stubborn in the sense of I don't want to let the comments of somebody, you know, bring me down or get me to a place where I feel negatively, because ultimately that opinion is irrelevant to me. Two, I can be quite petty. I can be quite petty. So what I mean by that is yes. if somebody trolls me, I either ignore them or I will troll them back, but do more. So if they go low, I go lower until they end up blocking me. And then I'm like, yes, okay. Well, there you go. That will teach you not to mess with me, you know. But the thing is that it's always going to hurt. I think when you put yourself out there on a public platform, especially as a Black woman, especially if you're a Black woman with a platform who has, you know, important things to talk about, especially if you're, you know, if you're fat or you're dark skin, all of these kinds of things, people are always going to find something to pick on, because it's almost like, oh my gosh, she has the audacity to be loud and vocal about all of these things. Like, because of the way she looks in terms of like desirability currency, it's like, you should be down here not talking. Like, we are the ones that need to be up here. So when you start to see people who live in bodies that aren't as privileged start talking, it makes people feel very uncomfortable, because it challenges their perception of what desirability and what attractiveness looks like. For me, a lot of it is either overtly horrible trolling, or it's concern trolling, health trolling, where people, you know, disguise their fat phobia by saying, oh, but you know, it's not good for your heart, or you're gonna die when you're this age, and it's like, what about your lungs and stuff? And it's like, ultimately nobody cares about the health of anybody else that isn't their family. I think people use it as an excuse, and you know, these things that they do, they're always gonna hurt. But what I've found is that I can't allow the opinions of trolls or people who can't even get on the internet under their real photos to tell me about myself. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can't, you're too scared to even upload a photo of yourself, that which makes me feel like you're either a really disgusting, horrible person, or you yourself have self-esteem issues and you don't want people to drag you over your appearance. Yep. So who out of the two, I feel like I need to take the high road. Sometimes take the high road and just ignore it. Yeah. And you can always tell when people are projecting their own insecurities on you as well. A lot of the time I just meet it with pity, because it just means that they're still kind of battling demons, you know, that they're trying to like outsource on you. Yeah,
it's true. Like, you know, they say hurt people, and a lot of the times, you know, people don't treat you based on yourself. They treat you based on the internal demons that they're facing, and they project that onto you. So I love that you said it's so important not to let other people's thoughts and opinions like define you. And for me, I'm always like, when people are like, oh, she's so full of herself, it's like, yes, who else should I be full of? Like, should I be full of your negative opinions? Like, I think not. You know, so we just have to approach life with that energy. Like, the goal is not to be liked by everyone, and there will be people who like you and there will be people who don't. But I think we all owe it to ourselves not to let the negative thoughts and opinions of other people define you, because at the end of the day, it's your life, it's your story. And I really see that in you know, how you just responded to that question. Like, you realize this is actually my life. Like, I get to decide how I show up for myself and what I think about myself, and not let other people dictate that. So I think that's really, really beautiful. One thing I love about your book, Fatly Ever After, is that you often describe it as a love letter to fat Black women. And also, it's very practical. They're like, okay, you want to challenge this in society, do this, this, and this. You want to be an ally, do this, this, and this. And I love that, because I think personal development space can get really like fluffy without like really any practical steps. So have you got some, you know, practical steps for women who are listening who don't currently love their bodies right now? What practical steps can you give them to begin to love their body and feel confident in who they are?
Yeah, I think when it comes to these kinds of like self-help books and coaching guides and things like that, sometimes there can be an overwhelming amount of information that can sometimes be quite vague. I really did want to try and be as thorough as possible and try and give, you know, people action points, because it's all well and good, you know, reading about my story and reading about facts and figures about things. But if you can't take anything away from the book, then for me, it just feels like, well, what's the point in buying the book? So for me, in terms of loving bodies, I think for me, my first tip that I always say is you have to acknowledge that this is not a quick fix. Self-love, the journey to self-love is not linear. It will take a long, long time. And I think it's important to acknowledge that, because sometimes I think there are some women out there who think, oh, I'm going to be doing up self-love now. And it's, you know, in 3 months, I'm going to be confident. It's going to be amazing. And that may be the case, but it also is important that you are going to have days where you feel terrible. You are going to have days when you feel really rubbish. And it is important to acknowledge those days and don't see it as a sign of defeat. See it as you are existing in a society, especially a westernized society, that is constantly shoveling out information and content to make you feel like you're terrible. And so these are just the side effects of this barrage of information that we are constantly being exposed to. So it doesn't make you any less of a person if you don't like yourself, but acknowledge that this day or this week or these, you know, past 2 weeks have been rubbish, and then you get back on the horse and you start again. I also think it is important to curate your feed, to create your social media feed, to only show content that makes you feel good about yourself and your body. There's no point following people like, you know, the Kardashians and the Jenners and all of these IG models if every time you're scrolling, it makes you feel terrible in yourself, because all you will do is compare yourself to them and then start to think, well, why can't I look like them, even though their bodies are alleged? I'm going to put allegedly in here so I don't get in trouble. But even though their bodies are, you know, not 100% natural, you know, like it's really frustrating when we're now comparing ourselves to bodies that aren't, you know, all the way natural. And so it is important to follow accounts that make you feel good about yourself, accounts that affirm who you are and how you look and how confident you should feel.
Oh, such great tips. 100% agree that confidence and self-love is a practice, because life is a roller coaster. You know, life is not a straight road. We go up, we go down, we go up, we go down. And I think I had a very kind of like difficult relationship with my body as a teenager, like most of us do. And mine came from comparison, because I have a younger sister who's only 11 months younger than me. And we were pretty much the same size as kids. And then as we began to grow older, she's now like 6 foot, washboard stomach, you know, she could eat whatever she wanted and not gain any weight. And I was the one who was going to the gym all the time, exercising, eating all the salads, like being super healthy, this smoothie, that smoothie. And it wasn't like my body wasn't the same as hers. And I was like, what am I doing wrong that I don't have the long legs and the flat stomach and things like that? And as long as I compared my body to hers, I just felt such resentment inside of me. And for me, the switch really began to happen when I realized that there's actually more to me than just my body. You know, like, yes, I'm Tiwa, but I'm not just like the shape of my thighs or how much I weigh. Like, there is creativity, there is joy, there is love, there's my love for dancing and just like, you know, being around people I love. What's my bigger purpose? You know, when I realized that my body actually helps me become a better person, and my body actually allows me to live out my purpose, I was like, damn, she's a bad bitch, you know? Like, yeah. I would look in the mirror, I would, you know, touch my body, I would smack my ass, like literally take pictures. I love, you know, like moisturizing myself in the mirror. That's one of like my favorite things, because it's just like, you just see this melanin glowing and
glistening.
Literally, I'm just like, oh, I'm so here for it. But yeah, absolutely, like not being afraid to like actually get to know yourself and go deeper rather than just looking at what's externally as well. And self-care is so important. Like, actually know what you love and also what your body loves. Mm-hmm. Like, I love bubble baths and like going on long walks, and yes, taking yourself out on a day. Like, I have Tiwa time where I will schedule like Tiwa time into my calendar, and that's just my time to do like whatever I feel like, whatever my body wants, and to just carve out that time to send a message to my body like, you are important and I'm going to carve out time in my day to honor you and your needs, is also really, really powerful.
Gosh, that's amazing. Like, I love that. And I think I really liked what you said about you are more than just your body, because it is so true. I think with Western culture, I honestly do think this is like a westernized problem, in that we really judge people by their body type and what their bodies can provide. Mm. Whereas, you know, when we go to, you know, I feel like before the invasion of, you know, colonizers in Africa, because now I think now it's a bit different with regards to aesthetics and bodies and how much people rely on that and feel judged by that, especially in like, a lot of the countries in Africa that were colonized by the British and the French and the Spanish and the Portuguese and things like that. Mm. But before that, and even in some countries in Africa now, especially the smaller communities, the communities that live in villages and things like that, when they talk about their worth and what they bring to the table, it's always people, or it's always women that are known for, oh, I'm attracted to that woman because she hunts the most animals. I'm attracted to her because she's got a beautiful voice. Mm. I'm attracted to her because she weaves beautiful baskets. We very rarely hear about, oh, I'm attracted to her because she's got big tits or because she's got big thighs. Yeah. It's always about what they can provide, what their skills are, what their gifts are. And I just think that's beautiful, because, you know, it's those areas of the world that haven't been touched by westernized, you know, standards, that they really see the beauty in a person by their achievements and what they can do, as opposed to this vessel that is only here to just get us from A to B.
Literally.
And it is wild, though. It is, because, you know, when you decide to be in a relationship with somebody, or you're attracted to somebody, it's all about their spirit, their essence, their soul, the things that come out of their mouths. But for some reason, we are attracted to like the vehicle, like the actual outer casing, like sausage meat.
Yeah.
And it's just like, why are you attracted to the skin when, you know, all of the meat is in my brain and my heart, you know? It's just really wild.
Damn, mate.
It's just so wild.
I love that analogy. That's the first time I've ever heard that sausage meat analogy, but I'm definitely gonna keep it.
I don't even know where that came from. It just like randomly came to me.
It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. So I want to talk a little bit about stereotypes, and I think it's a great transition from what we've just talked about, because there's a chapter in your book called Black Fat Women Are More Than Just Your Sassies and Your Mommies. And I love that, because society hasn't really been kind to fat people, and from, you know, the negative stereotypes in the media to the marginalization of fat bodies. Can you share some myths that society believes about fat people? And you mentioned some of them in your story earlier. And why just these aren't true? Like, you know, like, oh, being fat means you're unhealthy. Really, you know? And there's this quote that's been going around, which I'm really grateful that it's going around. But it's like, if we all ate the exact same thing and went on the exact same diet, we would all still have different bodies. And I just absolutely love that, because it just goes to show, like, there's no normal body. They're just like, bodies are so different and so broad, and there's so much variety. Why are we all killing ourselves to fit one single type? Like, it just doesn't make sense. Can you share some of the myths that society has created around fat people, and why they aren't true, and how we can begin to dismantle fat phobia in society?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a strange one, because I think these myths have only really been around for like the last 100, 200 years or so, because before then, you know, I think fatter bodies were always seen as a sign of wealth, especially in, you know, African countries, Asian countries. When we look at some of the African the sort of statues and goddesses and things like that, they're always very voluptuous. So it's interesting that, you know, over the last couple of hundred years or so, that's kind of changed, it's kind of shifted. And it's why I always say that sometimes fat phobia is very, very strongly linked to race and racism. Because especially with African bodies, you know, our bodies are shaped, our phenotype is very different from white bodies, and that we're a lot more curvier. And I think there, you know, with the slave trade and colonization and things like that, we just started seeing this objectification of Black women's bodies specifically because they were curvier, and because, you know, bigger bums. You know, I think a lot of us know the story of Sarah Bartman, you know, the South African lady who was brought to the UK, and, you know, she had a huge bum and a long labia, and she was just objectified and had horrible, horrible things happen to her. And even when she passed away, her body, she wasn't allowed to rest. Like, her body was taken to France in a museum, and it was prodded, and she was stuffed and put in a museum because people were so fascinated by how big she was. And it just goes to this dehumanization of bigger bodies, or bodies that white people see as, you know, strange or weird. Also, it ties in with the patriarchy. I mean, that is a patriarch. I think fat phobia and patriarch, that is a whole other level of rubbish. But I think what we saw, and the reason that I put that chapter in the book, is because we really have to start holding the media more accountable for how society sees fat people, because people's impressions of everybody for a lot of the time do come from what they watch and what they consume on TV. So what we've seen, especially with fat Black women in the media, is there are certain tropes that feel like we always are slotted into in order for us to be valid. It feels like we can't be well-rounded, three-dimensional human beings outside of these tropes. So we have the mammy character, a very well-known character that was played by Hattie McDaniel in Gone with the Wind. She played, she literally played like the slave, the mammy, the submissive woman who was looking after the white, you know, vulnerable, innocent protagonist. The matriarch, you know, it's always the fat Black woman is very matriarchal, very strict, very stern, but then also very submissive when it comes to white people. She is the caretaker. She is there to lift up people who are more privileged than her, and is not expected to really complain about that. But in her own family unit, she is still seen as, you know, the aggressive one, the one that shouts at her kids. You know, even when we have comedies that make fun of this trope, Big Mama's House, The Clumps, all of these movies where you have Black men, again, another subject, there's so many layers to it, but when you have, you know, there is something so problematic with Black men specifically making jokes and creating characters based on fat women, fat Black women, and darker skin women, because I can't from all of the comedies that I've seen where you have men like Martin Lawrence, you know, Martin Lawrence, Eddie Murphy, you know, Jamie Foxx,
Tyler Perry.
I can't think of any one of them who has created a character of a woman who is light skinned or slim. It's always been dark. It's always been fat. And they've always had attitude problems, or, you know, it's an interesting one. And so so we've got that trope. We've got the submissive, you know, only good to bear children and be submissive. We also have the aggressive one, or the sexually aggressive trope, which is one where you see Black women generally, or and fat Black women being portrayed as the man eater, or always wanting to have sex, or, you know, we even see in music videos, I mean, the amount of times where we've seen people like Taylor Swift and Miley Cyrus and Billie Eilish and all of these white women who, when they get to a point where they want to be seen as sexy and sexual, they start changing the sound of their songs to more, they make it a bit more urban, and then they bring in black backing dancers to provide, to amp up the sex, to be twerking, and all of these kind of things, you know. It's it's definitely a trope where when white women want to be seen as, you know, less innocent, then they bring black people into the game. And I just, it's such a racial microaggression that I think definitely needs to be talked about, in that, you know, we already have these tropes and these stereotypes of being the angry black woman and being aggressive and being hot, being masculine as well. We've also got the fat character who is always depressed, who always has low self-esteem, who is the one that never gets laid. She's always like the best friend that has nothing going for her. She doesn't get to be successful. She doesn't get to have a boyfriend. She doesn't get to, you know, be living her best life. She's always just, again, a background or a stepping stone for the main character to look even better. We've had these traits of how fat people come across on TV, always being lazy, dirty, unlucky in love, like the bumbling fool, insecure. We even see in cartoons, things like Family Guy, where you've got Peter, who is, again, the bumbling fool. You've got The Simpsons, Homer, overweight, the bumbling fool. We've got Tom and Jerry, where you've got the housekeeper who is plus size. You never see her face again. It's always us just being paraded like pieces of meat and not giving us the humanity of even being able to see that person's face, to see their personality. And I do think that the media is a lot harder on women than, I mean, than men. And that's just a reflection of the patriarchal society that we live in. Because again, when we look at TV shows, it's always the fat men that have the hot, slim wives. Never see it the other way around. Unless we, we never see it the other way around.
That's so true.
Yeah, last year there was a documentary on TLC, I want to say. I can't remember what it is. I think it got cancelled, rightfully. But it was a documentary about fat women with slim men. And it was just the, like, the fact that they had to make it into a documentary is, it's disgusting, because it almost feels as if, well, you know, it's an issue for a fat woman to go out with somebody that is slimmer. Like, there would never be a documentary on it the other way around, because fat men, plus size men being with smaller women has been normalized from all the rappers to like TV shows, actors. We always see fat men with their slim, hot wives. But when it's the other way around, it's like, it's such a huge issue. And yeah, it just all needs to be dismantled. It all needs to be
literally
dismantled. Honestly.
I 100% agree. We need to hold the media accountable, because they create these narratives that people then normalize and think, oh, this is how it should be. And I think representation is so important, because often when, you know, a young girl sees somebody like her in the media, she goes, oh, if she can do it, I can do it too. Exactly. And, you know, it's so important to have a variety so that people don't fall into these negative stereotypes of, oh, fat people can only do this and only do that. And so I think it's so important that we, you know, we challenge these stereotypes when we see them in the media, you know, maybe like reporting some ads, you know, creating your own content and media that is not fat phobic and actually is more inclusive of a variety of bodies. I think we all have a part to play. And I was reading Your Body's Not an Apology. That's another really, really good book. And she was talking about, oh my gosh, is it going to escape my mind right now? Oh yes, that humans are the ones who uphold the structures in society. Mm-hmm. And whether you're actively doing it or you're passively doing it, we're playing a role. And structures and these stereotypes can't exist if we don't keep reaffirming them over and over and over again. So I think it's so important that we have to be aware that we're not playing into the limiting and stricting roles that society has created, and we can carve our own path, and we can, you know, we can be as free as we want to be, and we don't have to like try and fit into all these limiting boxes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think for me, I just, the patriarchy just needs to be taken out. It just needs to be, it just needs to be gone. Literally. Because honestly, I do feel like it plays a huge part in in body politics, body identity.
100%.
You know, yes. The ways in which women's bodies are policed is it's always by male standards. And now it's like women have internalized that and feel like we have to look a specific way in order to feel wanted, in order to feel validation. Because as much as, you know, I don't have anything against plastic surgery, but as much as, you know, some women say, I want to get, you know, a BBL, I want to get hourglass shape now because I like it. It's just like, why do you like it? If there were no such thing as men, would you still get a BBL? Mm. Because for me, as much as somebody can say, yeah, I'm doing it for myself, it will make me feel great, I absolutely understand that. But I do also think there is a small slice of the pie that is doing it for validation from either, you know, people online, people that, you know, you may want to be attracted to, men or women. I do feel like there is a small part of that that is doing that for the approval of people as well. Because every time I think about these things, I always think, okay, if there were no such thing as men, they just didn't exist, would I do the things that I, like, would I be doing the things that I am doing? So for instance, I thought to myself, you know, when I was back then and I was losing a lot of weight, I was like, if there were no such thing as men, would I be actually be losing the weight? And genuinely, I would have like stayed the same, because I knew that a lot of it was me wanting to feel attractive and to be seen as attractive by men. And I sometimes just have to think, at the end of the day, men, there are some men out there that don't even wash under their foreskin. Like, they literally walk around with smegma all up and through. And these are the men that were supposed to be attracted. Nah, I'm sorry. Some men don't wipe their bums, walking around with like streaks. And we are supposed to be like trying to do all of these things to attract them when they don't do the same for themselves or for us. No.
Agreed.
It's not the one.
I saw a tweet that said, somebody said, these aren't the men Destiny's Child told us to cater to. And it literally just like, it took me out, because I was like, no, honey, these are not the kind of men we are meant to be catering to, because, Do you know, my biggest pet peeve is actually, like, I think society has created a generational cycle of low self-esteem in women and girls.
Yeah.
And because shame fuels consumerism, right? And patriarchy and capitalism benefits off consumerism. So literally, it was like, back in the day, a group of men got together and said, let's create the most unachievable version of a woman and then market to them and try and manipulate them to try and attain this level of beauty that we know is not achievable. Because as long as they don't feel good enough, they will always look to external things to validate themselves, which means they go shopping, which means more money in their pockets.
Yeah.
And when you actually realize, like, the biggest, like, fuck you to the patriarchy is actually not giving in to these toxic kind of, like, diet culture and, you know, hating yourself. Like, the best way to revolt against it is to love yourself and be unapologetic and know that you don't need the creams or the teas or, you know, the diet pills to actually be worthy. Like, you are worthy just the way you are. Like, you matter simply because you exist. And I think we really have to spread this message all throughout society so that we actually break this generational cycle, because every single woman and girl out there deserves to love and believe in herself. It's a birthright. And the fact that there are a group of people in society that actually go out of their way to make us hate ourselves, it drives me nuts, you know?
It's wild. And I think self-love really is a revolution. It is such a radical act. And it sounds so weird to say, but like you say, like, people are making money off of our insecurities. And I always give this example. Feminine hygiene products, I'm sorry, it's not something, unless you have an actual condition, we shouldn't be putting stuff up there. That's my personal opinion. I feel like the only thing we kind of need is water. General cleaning, I mean. But then like, we have people, corporations and all of these people and brands are inventing things for us to be self-conscious about so that they can make money off of it. I don't see grooming products for men's smegma or, you know, like, you know, wipes for them to clean their ball sack.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not seeing stuff like that when I go to shops. It's always for women. It's always, oh, you know, women's, yeah. You know, even mm-hmm. talking about periods, it's only recently that it's starting to be less taboo. Like, but back then, you know? It's like, yeah. Oh, this woman's bleeding, like dirty. Let's hide all the menstruation products in the back. Let's shame these women, but we still want them to buy our products. So we're not going to, like, you know, talk about these things publicly or like outwardly or with pride, but we still want them to, like, you know, buy our stuff. And I just feel like the more that we create these issues, especially in women, to hate ourselves, the more these people are going to start making money. Like, the new thing now is like hip dips. Like, I'm seeing so many newspapers talking about, oh, do you have hip dips or do you have like this? And it's just why is this now a thing? Like, why is it now literally a thing? Well, can we not just exist and be happy? Like, men get to do it.
Yeah.
With the exception of, you know, I know that they have their issues with, like, you know, baldness and hair plugs and all that kind of stuff. But if we compare the two, men have it so easy. Why can't we just...
Yeah, it's crazy.
Show up.
With their all-in-one shampoo, conditioner, body wash, face cream, sun cream.
So
like...
simple.
Yeah. You talk about, like, women don't owe you femininity. And that's exactly kind of what we're talking about now. Like, women don't owe you fitting into that mold that is unachievable that, you know, the patriarchy has created. Women can just be women and be whoever and whatever they want to be. Just kind of wrapping up. I love in your book, you had very practical steps for, like, being a body positive ally. And you mentioned things like, you know, talking about other things, like things other than weight. Like, when you meet up with your friends, you know, don't the first thing be like, oh, you're talking about weight. Or, you know, when you see someone and you go, oh, you look good. Have you lost weight? Like, no, please stop doing that, because it associates looking good with losing weight. And then we're just feeding into this culture over and over again. Are there other practical things that people can do to be a body positive ally so we can begin to break down these, like, toxic structures that society has created?
I think it is really good when people can call out others when they're saying something problematic. I think we need to do that a lot more. If you're with a friend who is fat and you're out and somebody says something really horrible, you should call that person out. Like, stand up for your fat friend, because your silence is complicit, and it makes, you know, by you staying silent, it's almost like a signal to your friend that you co-sign what that person is saying. So I think any type of fat phobia that people witness online or in real life needs to be called out, because fat phobia, there are still a lot of people that don't even believe it's a thing. They don't think that it's valid. There are people, because we have, you know, humiliated and abused fat people for so long, people see the abuse of fat people as it's normal, it's normalized. I always say it's like one of the last acceptable kind of hate crimes, because we see it's so normalized on TV to take the piss out of somebody that's fat or talk about somebody that's fat. But if you do it to somebody that, you know, maybe like really short, or somebody that may be really tall, or, you know, then suddenly it's very problematic. But, you know, taking the mick out of fat people has always been seen as funny and normal and all of that kind of stuff. So I think we definitely need to start calling it out.
Yeah.
I think if you are somebody that works within the media industry or the entertainment industry behind the scenes, it is so, and even in like, not like workplaces, it's so important to be able to hire people or be, you know, active in the hiring of people that are fat as well, especially in especially in entertainment industries and things like that. Because, you know, when it comes to casting agents and directors and producers and things, they are so used to working in a in an area that is full of other slim people and thin people, mm-hmm. that when it comes to casting mm-hmm. models and things like that, they're always going to cast people that are normal to them. And so I think mm. once you start hiring like fat women in casting agencies, in advertising agencies, in PR and marketing, they're going to bring a new mm. perspective. They're going to want to see women that look like them and represent them. And so that is one yeah. good way to have representation within the media, like positive, is to hire people mm. that do not, you know, subscribe to this westernized standard of beauty. It is to hire people that look different, yeah. who can provide a different perspective as well. Yeah. If you have a fat friend and you are feeling, you know, bloated, or you're just feeling, you know, a bit big, like saying to them, "Oh, I feel so fat," is just the worst thing, because fat mm-hmm. isn't a feeling. It's not a feeling. You don't yeah. feel fat. You aren't fat. You're probably no. just, you know, you're probably just bloated, or you might have put on like, you know, 2 or 3 pounds, but you're actually not mm. fat. And to say yeah. that with such vitriol, with such hatred in your voice, mm. is telling your fat friend that, "Oh my gosh, I don't want to look like you." Like, people really need to be careful with the way in which they talk about fatness mm-hmm. in front of their fat friends, yes. but also in general yeah. as well, the way in which they talk about it.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Yeah. And I think probably the last one is, if somebody has changed in weight, whether they've lost weight or put on weight, don't mention it. We don't need to mention, oh, mm. you know, have you put on weight or have you lost weight? Or if somebody loses weight, don't then start saying, "Oh my gosh, you're so pretty and you look a lot better." And, mm. you know, because mm. you're reinforcing that very dangerous idea that slimmer equals prettier. And that yeah. is what, that is yeah. what we're trying to dismantle.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Absolutely. Amazing. Those were such good tips. Final question, because I think this is a really important one. One of the foundations to being confident and killing it is about being unapologetic in sharing your story and owning that story. I always say there is beauty in your strengths and your struggles. And I love how you share your wins, you share your successes, but you also share your struggles. And so, I want to know, what's the impact that being vulnerable online and openly sharing your story has had on you and your business and your community? What are some of the positive effects that you have seen from openly sharing your story and owning who you are? Because I think that will really inspire a lot of women who want to share their story and put themselves out there to do it. Because if they see you doing it, they definitely know that they can do it too.
Yeah, I think there's so much power in being vulnerable. I think there is, and one great thing that I've seen is that I no longer feel alone. I feel seen, mm. and it's allowed other mm. women who look like me to feel seen. Because when I was younger, being fat and dark skinned in school, and I lived in a predominantly sort of white area, I'm not seeing any representation, so therefore I must not be pretty. And so when I started opening up and sharing, I've had so many other women share their stories with me, and it makes me feel as if, like, wow, so all this time I thought that I was the only one that was having these thoughts, and I was the only one that was sort of going through these things. It made me feel less alone, and being able to share those stories really gives me a sense of community, which I think, and solidarity, which is incredibly important. And I think there's always going to be people out there who find it a bit weird when people are super vulnerable online, especially if you're talking about something embarrassing or shameful. But being able to be honest with yourself, either if it's, you know, online, or whether you know, speak to a therapist or speak to family, is the first step in healing. Being able to process all of the things that you've gone through, because being able to vocalize it out loud and say it out loud means that you are at a point where you are able to now process all of the trauma and all of the terrible things that has happened to you. And it is the first step to being able to heal, is to just kind of decanter all of the negative thoughts out there and turn it into something positive that other people can learn from, because we never know who may be going through the same thing. We never know whose mind we may be able to change. There have been so many people who I've spoken to who were very fat phobic horrible, horrible things that they would say. But the more I spoke about things, the more conversations we would have via messages. And now these people are like some of the most body positive people ever, because sometimes it is important to share specific stories, because people don't know, especially with like fat Black women, for instance, you know, there isn't a lot of information or perspectives about us out there, because the monopoly of it has been given to fat white women. Be honest, it's very white, which is why I wrote the book, because I thought we need to have perspectives of Black fat women. And so there are a lot of things that I speak about in the book that a lot of people like had no idea happened to fat women and Black women. So for me, being able to, you know, share something that may be embarrassing or shameful, even though I've shared it, it makes me feel less alone, because then I get messages from people who have been like, oh my gosh, this has happened to me. How can we combat this? How can we change this into something good? And so for me, I think one of the best things for me has just been, it's allowed me to be able to heal from a lot of the traumatic things that I've had to go through. And it really allows me to just be able to speak my truth. It's just incredibly liberating, incredibly amazing. Liberating. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I love that. I love that. So if there's anyone listening to this who you haven't been sharing your story, you've been quieting your voice to make other people feel more comfortable, or you've been shrinking yourself and holding yourself back, please don't do that. The world needs the message in you. The world needs to hear your story, because your story is going to set you free, and it's also going to help inspire and set other women who are similar to you free as well. So Steph, thank you so much for being such an incredible guest. This was such a beautiful conversation and funny as well. Just the energy that I needed today. So I'm sure so many people are going to benefit from this. And if you did love this episode, please remember to share it with your family and your friends. This is how we begin to break down all of these limiting structures in society that hold women back. And also remember to tag @confidentandkillingit, and also tag Steph as well, @StephYeboah, and I will put all her details in the show notes as well. So Steph, just to finish off, I would love you to complete these sentences, okay? Steph, I love you for ... Steph, I forgive you for ... and Steph, I'm proud of you for ...
Oh, Steph, I love you for being resilient and not giving up. Steph, I forgive you for the many years of negative body talk and self-hate and all of these things, because you have been able to grow from it and you have learned how to be at peace with your body. And then, oh, sorry, what was the third one?
I'm proud of you for.
Oh, Steph, I'm proud of you for, for your tenacity, really being able to, I guess, forge out a career and a path for yourself. And again, I think it links back to the first one, but like not giving up and being very patient, and getting myself to where I have always wanted to be.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for that. That was beautiful and an amazing way to end this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Remember to leave a review on Apple Podcasts and to rate the podcast as well. It really helps getting this amazing message of self-love and confidence out to the rest of the world. Thank you so much for listening. Love you all. Until next time, stay confident and killing it.